Lige nu i Rema 1000. Bologna lækker italiensk is. Flere varianter, kun 29 kroner per pakke. Godt nytår fra Rema 1000.
Marok Podcast tager dig med backstage.
Så er det blevet onsdag, og dermed tid til endnu en omgang Marok Podcast. I dag kan du godt belave dig på at finde trompetbukserne og de store solbriller frem, og hvordan skal den så forstås i rockmæssig sammenhæng? Jo, dagens hovedpersoner er svenske The Night Flight Orchestra, som i slutningen af februar udsender deres femte album. Bandet består blandt andet af medlemmer fra det melodiske dødsmetalband Soilwork, og har også blandt andre bassist Charlie D'Angelo fra Arch Enemy med. Og det mix blander du så op med lige dele disco, funk og amerikansk West Coast AOR, så har du The Night Flight Orchestra. Giv det en chance og lur mig, om du ikke vil kunne lide det. I dagens podcast kan du møde forsanger og stifter Bjørn Street, som altså både kan være hård og aggressiv, men også funket og ekstremt melodisk i sin udtryksform. Og det bliver til en snak om blandt andet stemmeproblemer, om at skifte karakter, om ABBA og inspirationskilder, om kedsomhed, og så får vi også en lille status på, hvad der sker i Soilwork-lejren. Jeg hedder Sten Skovgaard. Velkommen til denne uges MyRock podcast om The Night Flight Orchestra. Og inden du skal med Bjørn, så får du lige her den nyeste single, forløberen for albumet Aromantic. Det her er Night Flight Orchestra med The Vinyls. So I'm here in Stockholm with Björn, the lead vocalist of the Night Flight Orchestra and Soilwork and other projects.
Yes.
You are a busy man.
Yes, very, very.
So let's start on the reason why we're here. The reason is that Night Flight Orchestra is coming with their fifth record in just a month from now. Mm. Tell me, this band, Night Flight Orchestra, formed in 2007, during a tour with Soilwork. How come that you got the idea of forming yet another band? Were you bored or what happened?
I think I was a little bit bored at the time. You know, even though I'm a metalhead, it felt like there was something left to express, you know, and because it's very hard to sort of channel all your influences into one band. You know, it's like I've said in many other interviews, it's hard to be Lou Gramm and Tom Araya in the same band, you know. So that's pretty much what happened. I mean, I met David for the first time. He was a session guitar player on that tour. And we started bonding over music and, you know, ended up in the back lounge having sort of like a pre-show party and going through so many albums and songs. And we came to the conclusion that we need to create a band that sort of captures the feeling of being on the road, like being in motion, you know. And we were sitting in the back lounge looking out the window, maybe in Arizona or somewhere. And, you know, it's pure magical, you know. And there's no better way to travel, I would say, except flying. I need to say that. But so I think that's where the idea came up, you know. And we started looking around, like, who do we know that sort of gets this, you know, this sort of concept that we had in mind. And he had some friends and I had some friends, and then we got together. I think it took some time. I want to say we didn't really get together to jam until 2009. We did some demos before that, you know, here and there. And then we got together in 2009, and that was one of the most magical moments in my life, I think, when the band got together.
To those who have listened to Soilwork and then to Night Flight Orchestra, it's two very, very different ball games.
Yes.
And tell me, take us to the lounge. What were you discussing? Which band came? Which band name came up? And what albums? What were the inspiration?
There was a lot of Stevie Nicks and a lot of Fleetwood Mac in general, because she's like, we always use the term of what's classic or not, you know, and it can be everything from something you're wearing or a song or a riff or a melody or just, you know, a story of somebody being arrested in a hotel lobby wearing only leather pants, you know, being carried out by the police. That's also a classic moment. I mean, so we wanted to capture the classic feel of things, you know, everything from especially like late 70s and early 80s when music was very cocaine infused, you know, and somehow we like that more than the sort of, you know, pot infused music that was more sort of early 70s, more psychedelic, you know, and we also felt that something was missing in there. And by mentioning these drugs, it's not like we're promoting them by any means. It's more we talk the music, how the music sounds, you know, and how records were produced. So that's a whole concept in itself. So so we wanted to provide something that was missing out there, like filling a void, you know, so I don't know. It was very intriguing from the very start, you know, to create this band and also create a soundtrack to ourselves of being in motion and being on tour, and that's really what sparked it.
It's been 13 years now.
Yeah.
Did you have an idea when this happened in 2007 that we would see Night Flight Orchestra forming this way?
No, I think I really understood it, you know, when we got together to jam, that this is going to last for a long time, you know, but I didn't really have in mind that, you know, like 10 years later that it was going to be nominated for a Grammy, for example, you know, that's just crazy, but it makes sense because it's so damn good and we're so proud of it, and I think it deserves a Grammy. If I'm going to be a little bit un-Swedish right now, like Swedes don't really brag, but
Thanks, don't either.
No. Okay. No, but we feel very confident about the music, and it's not about success in the end, but it's, I think since from the get-go, we were on a mission, you know, to provide something that was missing out there. So it's really cool to see the recognition too, you know, but first and foremost, we started this project to provide something for ourselves. But then we realized that it's also, people need to hear this, you know, we want to share this with the world, and there's something missing out there, and here it is, you know.
At this time, it was Soilwork that was your primary band.
Mm.
Were you at some point worried of destroying that legacy with doing Night Flight Orchestra?
No, not really. I mean, I came to the point where I was just, you know what, I'm just going to do exactly what I feel like doing, you know, and already at that time I've been, you know, I started the solo work in late 90s, like 97, I would say, and we've been touring so much, and as much as I liked being on the road and playing metal, there was something missing in my life, and nothing was going to stop me from sort of exploring that, so... I think that was something that maybe David felt as well, even though he's been doing a lot of types of different music. You know, he's been a songwriter for indie pop and God knows what. So, but I think that was the driving force behind it. I wanted to develop as a singer too, you know, and I think I've developed a lot through the Night Flight Orchestra, and I've also brought that with me to Soul Work. And ever since I started Night Flight, Soul Work has become more interesting for me again. So I think that was needed, you know.
What were the reactions that you got when you told people that, well, I'm going to do this classic rock AOR band?
Well, most people were excited about it. And when they got to hear it, they loved it. And I still, to this day, have not heard anything bad except some YouTube comments somewhere in Blabbermouth maybe, but even Blabbermouth you don't see that many, you know, bad reactions, like negative reactions at all. It's like I'm blown away, you know, because there's probably a lot of people who would get sort of provoked by this, but I think it's you know, a lot of people talk about it as a guilty pleasure, but there's nothing to feel guilty about in the end, you know. But if people want to use that term, and you know, sure, go ahead. And it's like, oh, that's my guilty pleasure, the Night Flight Orchestra. It's like, that's a band I'm allowed to listen to outside listening to metal, you know. But it's just music, you know, and it stands out. And so I'm really happy and blown away by the reactions. Yeah.
You said before that some of the things that you learned in Night Flight, you brought over to Soil Work. But is it like two different kinds of Björn, that's one in Soil Work and one in Night Flight? Can you tell them apart?
The switch is easier than you think, and Björn is in both bands, but it's a little bit different characters. I put my Night Flight hat on and maybe my Soul Work vest on, but that's about it, you know. But it's musically, it's very separate for me and also for David, I'm sure. And I think I don't know, we see it very much as separate things, but then you also have your sense for melody that, you know, you carry with you wherever you go. So of course maybe that will cross over, you know, sometimes, but the expression in itself is very different, I think.
I guess that's part of being Swedish, the thing about the melody, because I don't know what's in the water up here, because every time I listen to Swedish music, I don't care whatever genre it is, it's so melodic every time. So what is the secret? Except from ABBA.
Yeah, exactly. It's always the hardest question. I think what it is, one thing I've realized is that if you were growing up in the 70s and 80s, and maybe now too, people didn't really listen to the lyrics. They listened to the melodies. Swedish people never like, oh, the lyrics? What is it talking about? I don't know. It's like the melody is great, you know. So I think people were really focused on the melodies, and that it was the melodies that spoke to them and not the lyrics. You know, not saying, I mean, Swedish people can definitely write some really awesome lyrics too, but I think that's where our focus was lying, you know. And I found myself too, like, you know, when you're asked to do a karaoke, I mean, then it's easy because there's a, you know, a teleprompter or whatever, but it's like, I know that lyric. It's like, no, I don't, you know, so it's like, and that sort of shows you. And I, as a kid, my first memories is really like melodies, you know. I remember hearing, you know, when I was at my daycare mom, when I was maybe, I don't know, 5-6 years old. And my first memory is the Swedish guitarist Janne Schaffel and his song Brusa Högre Lilla Å, which is a beautiful memory. And that really did something to me. It was the most comforting thing I've ever heard. And then also Mark Knopfler, Local Hero, the theme, you know, so that did something. It's like melody started to speak to me, and it was like created all these beautiful pictures in my mind, and it felt really comforting. So I think, I don't know, maybe people have sort of similar experiences, you know, and not only in Sweden, obviously, but I think that might be one of the things. We were so like focused on melodies and maybe not the song as a whole with lyrics and everything as a combination, you know.
Do you think that music plays a bigger part of your life as a Swede than in every other parts of the world? Do you think music is more integrated into,
I don't know,
the Swedish lifestyle?
I mean, everybody likes music, you know, so it's hard to say if we're that much different, you know. I think I don't really come from a musical family, like as far as being a musician. They did listen to a lot of music, you know, when I was growing up, especially in the car. And I think that's where I, you know, being in motion, listening to music, that was my favorite thing. And my mom was putting on a lot of Eurythmics and Bruce Springsteen and Fleetwood Mac and God knows what. So there was a special feeling, you know, being on the road, because they used to go to a lot of like dog shows with their bloodhounds when I was growing up. We were staying at hotels and watching a lot of Eurovision, you know, so I think that also had a big impact. And I think, you know, I think late 70s and early 80s Eurovision in general is a big influence on Night Flight Orchestra as well. I think that's what makes it stick out. And I mean, even like Swedish indie pop from the early 90s also, you know, so it's all over the place, and somehow it just makes sense.
So at the point where you started to pick your own music, when you choose what to listen to, what did you listen to?
I'm trying to remember. I mean, I discovered heavy metal through Number of the Beast. You know, I'm sure a lot of people have the same story. You know, we went to this gas station in the village where I was born and raised, and I saw the cover of Number of the Beast, you know, and it's like, wow, that's the most amazing cover I've ever seen. Never heard about them, I mean, or heard their songs. So I convinced my mom to buy it, and we put it in the car stereo on the way home, and my life changed in 2 seconds, hearing, you know, Invaders opening the album. So something happened there, and I did listen a lot to sort of heavy metal. There was a lot of Kiss, Twisted Sister, and Wasp at my... first I was in a private daycare, and then I moved to like a preschool thing, like when you're 6 years old before you're starting first grade. And there was this kid who was always playing like Wasp and stuff there, and that was our soundtrack to stealing the girls' dolls and hide them, you know. That was very rebellious. So I mean, something definitely happened there. But then my mom, she played so much pop, and we were listening so much to radio in the car, and I think I loved all those timeless melodies. You know, you can say what you want about the productions in the 80s, you know, and they're glossy and big, and you know, but melodies, very, very timeless. Yeah, so I think it's hard to, I mean, and then I started, you know, buying records, and I'm trying to remember what my first sort of pop records were. I think back then there was Absolute Music as well, like a compilation. I don't know if that was released in Denmark.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And all of them.
Mr. Music as well.
Oh, yeah.
So there was a lot of that going on as well. So I like to buy them every year, you know, and listen to the new songs. So I got into it, you know, and at the same time, I was listening to a lot of heavy metal. And then very beginning of 90s, I discovered extreme metal. So it's, yeah, and then black metal. And then I started collecting disco records, you know, and listening to black metal at the same time. It's really weird, the whole thing. And I played in so many bands. I played guitar in a reggae ska band. I played bass in an indie pop band. And then I had a death metal band and a black metal band and this and that. So, which all happened in Landskrona when I started going to junior high, you know. So it's a big mix of everything, really.
Is there a genre that you never had played or never will play because you've been around?
Well, there's country music, you know, and I like some country, but I don't think I would get into that, you know. But I mean, there's so many other things you could do. I don't know. Hard to say. If it was, somebody would ask me to do a solo album, I'm not quite sure what I would do. I feel pretty balanced musically now that I have the best of both worlds, and that's solo work and then Night Flight Orchestra, and I get to express just about everything through those bands, I feel. But you never know.
What is the priority between soil work and night flight?
It's 50-50.
But how do you balance it?
It's hard. We're trying to separate the sort of album cycles and touring cycles starting from now on, because last year was pretty crazy. You know, we did 3 festivals with both bands, same day with only 1 hour in between.
That's the switch again.
The switch, yes.
Wow.
So I did, you know, night flight and on with a beret and the suit and James Brown's sunglasses, and then did a show and then a break of 1 hour and Liden Gammeldansk was in. And then the metal vest on, going on with soul work. And somehow it worked. The switch was very interesting, and I felt with soul work, like, wow, I sing really good today. It's like, maybe I should start warming up, you know, after 20 years, because I did night flight before, you know. So that it was a really good warm up, and it worked. Voice was fine, but I don't think that's a winning concept in the long run. So we're gonna try to separate it, and it's very important to us, you know, both bands. You know, David is also, me and David wrote the whole latest soul work album, for example. So it's. It's both bands are very important.
But I think when you do 2 shows, 1 soil work and 1 night flight, how do you preserve your voice? Because it must be hard.
It's fine as long as I don't get sick. But then if we would be doing that every day for 30 days, you know, that wouldn't have been working. You know, sooner or later, you're just going to blow your voice, even though my voice can definitely take a beating. You know, we did a North American tour where we did 54 shows in a row. That was rough, but it worked, you know, because I didn't get sick. But if you get sick, it's very hard to, you know, get back from that, you know, and get well again, when especially when you're on tour. You know, it's all, you're on a tour bus with 15 people. It's like bacteria everywhere. So
I guess you have woke up in the morning on a show day and thinking, wow, this throat is not going to work.
Absolutely. I remember one time in Australia, it was a sold-out show in Melbourne. We already knew that since 2 months before coming there. And I woke up in the morning and I cranked the AC because it was so damn hot. And then I woke up in the morning and could not speak. And I was like, no, what am I going to do? You know, and we had the promoter running out in town trying to find like a spray or something. And he found this ginger something spray, and I used that all afternoon. Nothing really happened. And then we're sitting there in the dressing room and we can hear people chanting soul work, you know, and it's like, oh, what am I going to do? Still can't speak, you know. And then I went on stage and everything worked. I could sing everything. And it was, you know, it was all fine, you know. And then after the show, walked off stage, couldn't speak again at all. So it was all adrenaline. That's crazy what adrenaline can do, you know? So, I mean, then again, if it was a lousy show or, you know, bad crowd or something, maybe it wouldn't have worked out the same way, but it was electric, you know? So that's all you need sometimes, adrenaline.
Yeah.
Or Gammeldansk.
Or Gammeldansk. Well, there's a limit for that.
Yeah.
The other guys in Night Flight also have other duties in other bands. So what do you tell them as a band leader? How do you force them to take a priority, or what do you do?
Well, I wouldn't consider myself as a band leader. I might be a pretty driving force, you know, but it's a very democratic band, you know, I mean, I also understand for Charlie, you know, that's, you know, he's touring with Arch Enemy, and that's a pretty big income for him, you know, so it's not like I can tell him, you need to quit Arch Enemy, or, you know, so no, I mean, we have a session bass player, his name is Rasmus, and he's fantastic, so he can jump in whenever Charlie can't do it, and I mean, it's just the reality of things. If we were going to plan everything around Arch Enemy, it wouldn't have worked, you know, and Charlie is very happy there, so, you know, I don't want to push him, you know, and we're just happy when he shows up, because he's a brilliant bass player, you know, in Night Flight Orchestra.
Let's make a thought experiment. Okay. If you were to choose between your babies, Night Flight and Soilwork, what would the outcome be?
I wouldn't want to get to that point, you know. I like to think that we can do this, you know. I've been thinking about it, of course, if it would happen, but I have no answer for it. I it's impossible.
It would be the circumstances that would decide.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. All right. Well, let's talk AOR, because that's sort of the main identity for Night Flight. As I told you before we started this interview, I hear a lot of Toto. I love Toto.
Yeah.
And I hear a lot of Toto in your sound.
Yeah.
And I hear, apart from that, a lot of disco and a lot of funk. And it makes me happy.
Nice.
And one of the things that I want to compliment you about, and you can take it as a compliment or you can say, ugh, I don't like that.
Yeah.
Especially on your last record, the fourth, I think you begin to sound like Joseph Williams.
Wow. That's a compliment.
It is a compliment.
Yeah.
It's meant like a compliment. Have you any idols, someone that you look up to, someone that you try to like sound like, or is it just Bjorn singing the songs being written?
Well, it's definitely Bjorn singing the songs, but of course you have references, you know. And I mean, Joseph Williams, he's fantastic, you know, and of course, Bobby Kimball before that, you know, especially the first album, Toto. I was like, man,
that's massive.
Yes. And but then there's also the singers that you wish you sounded like, which you can't at all, which is like Rod Stewart. I don't have that type of voice, but he's one of my absolute heroes, you know. Mm-hmm. What a singer. And then we have, you know, of course, Dave Bickler and Jimmy Jameson from Survivor. But then I also have like female, you know, singers too. Like Annie Lennox is one of my absolute favorite singers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not like I can sound like her either, you know.
But no one can.
No, exactly. But it's like, it's very inspiring, you know. But I think it's extremely important to find your own voice and try to love it in the end, you know, which can be hard, you know. It's especially first times you get into a studio, record your own voice. It's terrible, you know. It's like, oh, that's not what I pictured, you know. That's not what came out of my mouth, you know. That's not how it sounds.
Was that the first time when you recorded Night Flight, you were surprised at how you actually sang?
Yeah, I mean, that was a big surprise. I mean, I already felt it on the jam session that we had, you know, and it's like, am I going to be able to pull this off? And it's like, when I did, it was the greatest kick in the world. But that doesn't mean that it's going to translate into the studio and sound exactly the way that you picture it or hear it in your head. That's always the scary part. It's like, that's not what I sound like, you know. That's most people's reaction, you know. So it takes time, a lot of studio hours and a lot of, you know, live shows to get to know your own voice and how to use it and how to love it, you know. So I think that's what happened. But I think I found I don't know. I found the warmth in my voice and sort of the soul in the voice as well, you know, because I've listened a lot to Motown as well, you know, and that's has also inspired me a lot, you know. LaBelle with Patti LaBelle, stuff like that too. It's just crazy singing, you know. It's and Dennis Edwards The Temptations, fantastic singing. There's so much good stuff coming out. Marvin Gaye. So a lot of singers have inspired me, but I think it's very important to find the depth in your voice and not trying to sound too much like somebody else. You know, let them inspire you, but there's got to be something about your voice, something that's, you know, that sticks out, and you need to find that. And I think I did, you know.
Did you take any lessons?
I only took three vocal lessons in my life, and that was right before I started adding more clean vocals for soil work. And that's about it. And the rest is just being in the studio, recording at home, you know, getting to know my own voice. And I think that's very important, and to listen to it, you know, really sort of
getting used to it.
Yeah, getting used to it and analyze it, and not overanalyze it by any means. But, you know, really, it's like, what is happening here? What, you know, what do I hear when I listen to my voice?
Mm. As I said, there's a lot of, should we call it West Coast rock in your sound? There's funk, there's disco. Is there a genre that you would like to incorporate into the future for Night Flight? Is it something that would, when you think about it, this would fit in?
I don't know. I don't think there are any limits, you know. So it's going to come by itself, really, you know. And that's what's so beautiful about this band. You can bring in something that it's like might not sound very much like Night Flight, but then we managed to make it sound like Night Flight. You know, it's like, you know, we've done some sort of Steely Dan influenced things as well. You know, it's another band that's, that means a lot to us, you know. And I don't know. It's and being very inspired by how ABBA made pretty complex arrangements that sort of still speaks directly to you. I think that's the thrill. And also Phil Collins and Genesis and stuff like that too. That's always sort of the quest, you know. It doesn't mean that every riff has to be that complicated, you know. It can be very simple, and we have songs like that too, but it's like, that's the quest of like doing something that sits together so well, and it grooves, and the arrangements are well thought through, but it also speaks very directly to you somehow.
When on the outside wheels keep moving, and from the outside nothing changed, yeah, in the something's brewing, and I can help but feel strange. Now I can hear those wings still beating, just like my heart when taking off. And I don't know where this is leading, but I make sure I bring my love. Some other day, I'll find a way to.
I read that on your new album, the drums that were used to record your new album is actually ABBA's old drum kit from Super Trooper.
Yes, correct.
Who came up with the idea?
Well, it happened sort of out of a coincidence, really. I mean, we went to the studio that we normally record our albums in, Nordic Sound Lab. And the owner said that, well, Per Lindvall was here, you know, I don't know, 1 or 1.5 years ago and recorded some tracks. And he left his drum kit here and he told me that's the drum kit I played on Super Trooper. And he left it here and, you know, he said he was going to pick it up later. And then he reminded him as well, but he never came back to pick it up. And it's like, you guys might as well use it. It's like, yeah, that's exactly what we're going to do. So, yeah. That's the story right there. Amazing. And the sound is perfect. So
it's almost like adding a part of the Holy Grail.
It is.
Weren't you afraid? Like, I mean, like in awe of using it?
Yeah. I mean, yes. I mean, Jonas, he must have felt really like weird sitting behind that kit, but I think it really inspired him too, you know? Yeah, it was a very special feeling for sure.
So now you are really standing on the shoulders of giants. Basically.
Yeah, yeah. And the mixing desk Queen used as well. So it's, yeah, it was the
magical... Well, you're not stepping down.
No, I'm not stepping down. No.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I think if you listen to the new single, Divinals, the only one out right now from the new album coming out late February, you can hear a lot of ABBA in that song.
Yeah.
Is that coincidence or...
No, I mean, of course, it inspires you. It's not like I sat down. It's like, okay, I'm gonna write a song that sounds like ABBA. You know, it just came out naturally. It's like when I did that melody, I wrote that whole song in maybe, I don't know, 2 hours. It was one of those songs, and when I heard the chorus, I also hear the harmonies. You know, and added the harmonies, and even with me, it sounded like ABBA before the Airline Annas added, you know, their vocals in the studio. So. Yeah, and I mean, they've been singing a lot of ABBA in their days, too. So, you know, they've been very inspired by that, too. So, but I mean, it wasn't meant as, you know, let's create an ABBA track or anything, you know.
But you got the name, so you just need a Benny in your band.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yes.
But let's talk about the new album, because, as I said, there's only one single out right now.
Mm.
Tell me about the rest of the album. What can we expect?
Well, it's definitely going to take you on a journey, you know. I think if you take out two tracks, let's say if you take out Transmissions and then the opening track, for example, Servants of the Air, and show that to a random person, they wouldn't believe it's the same band and coming from the same album. And I think that's the beauty of it, that we create soundtracks that takes you on a journey, and some of the songs sounds very different from each other, you know, but somehow they're still linked and shape up to be a real album, you know, the way it was meant to be. And I think I've always liked bands who had even like different music styles on their albums, you know, because it's very unexpected and it has the element of surprise, but somehow it all sort of, you know, connects throughout the whole album, you know. And I think that's what we talked about that before, that there are really no boundaries, you know, and that's what I love about it, you know. And so it's a very special album, and it's definitely filling a void out there, I think, in the music scene. And I think people very much gonna enjoy it. So many melodies running through the album, and jams and grooves and stomps, and yeah. And a very detailed production, you know. You can listen to this album 1,000 times, but you will still keep on discovering new details.
Right now, we're sitting in a label office in Stockholm. And if we rewind to the 70s, the 80s, the primarily did like albums. And that was when AOR, album-oriented rock, was invented. The term was invented. Nowadays, it's more like what can stream, what can do singles. You can't do albums anymore. So how is it to be an AOR band in 2020? Is it harder to like rely on doing a whole piece than just singles?
I mean, the album, you know, is dead as we used to know it. You know, it's different. You know, people are releasing EPs and singles here and there, and so are we, you know, but we still focus on making albums. That's still, it's always going to be important for us. But, you know, we also accept that the times are changing, you know, and it also gives you a chance of putting out something very unexpected, you know. We released Satellite last year. That's not even on the album. And for us, that was its own little separate unit. And then we released a short film, Cabin Pressure Drops, which everybody was very confused by because they thought it was the first single of the new album, and which it wasn't. You know, we recorded this already in April last year, but unfortunately it wasn't released until, you know, late fall. So, but those are things that sort of opens up new, you know, ideas instead of just the typical, you know, record album, release album, do press, tour, stop, do it all over again. So I think times are changing also in an interesting way that you can, you know, you can do more videos or short films and create soundtracks and, you know, whatnot. So yeah, it is what it is, you know, but we're trying to roll with the times and also create music that that has been long lost, you know, but still is very refreshing and makes sense today, you know.
And in between all of this, you do soil work, because that's another part of you. So I just want to touch ground on what's happening in soil work right now, because in 2019, you launched an album, Virkeligheden, and had a new drummer, or you didn't have a new drummer, but it was his first album.
Yes.
With you, because he came when Dirk left. So tell me, what's the status of soil work right now?
Well, we're actually recording some singles. Speaking of the new times. Yeah, we're doing sort of like a triple single thing, you know. We already released Feverish. That's the first out of three. And I just did the vocals actually yesterday for the second one. So it's, even though this is going to be a Night Fight Orchestra year, it doesn't mean that, you know, soul work stops completely. There is always something, you know. And so that's pretty much what's going on right now. We're going to do a little bit of festivals in the summer too. Well, we decided to not do too many since we're mostly going to do Night Fight this summer. So we'll make it work.
So busy as always.
Yes.
Light from making a flare. So that-
MyRock Podcast.
Og her til slut fik du så lige den sang, som Bjørn talte om i slutningen af interviewet, nemlig Soilworks nyeste Feverish. Og dermed også slut på denne uges MyRock Podcast. Tak fordi du lyttede med. Mit navn er Sten Skovgaard, og i næste uge så bliver det for alvor tungt i podcasten. Du kan godt begynde at glæde dig. Der hedder hovedpersonen nemlig Attila, forsanger i mytiske Mayhem.
MyRock Podcast.